say.
Yeah. Addy, I think especially for you, like, before you took this class, as you said before, you really didn't know that much about, like, the history of African-Americans in specifically in American history.
But that's the thing. Like, I didn't realize how significantly disadvantaged one specific race could be in a country where I thought there was equal opportunity for all, you know?
Absolutely. And again, the class has bright spots again because it has impeccable timing in all of our lives, especially with us being at such a young age, but also seeing how it's playing out on a larger scale. You know, humans are more similar than we are different. And when we look at how these events play out, we'll see on one side, you know, these things are still happening. They're very real. And we're not so different from, you know, our predecessors, but in a way we have an opportunity to make a difference, be a change, but it doesn't come without learning about it.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Roommate Conversations podcast with Aditya and Ben. Both of us are currently rising juniors at Emory University and have started this podcast with the main objective of unlocking the authentic student experience through discussions of various topics. Today, I'm extremely excited to introduce a good friend of ours at Emory, Cameron Obioha. As usual, before I introduce him, let's hit it with the intro music.
Thank you so much, Alex, for making that theme song.
Thanks, Alex.
All right, Cameron. So why don't we start with a little bit of introductions. Where are you from? Your year at Emory, your major, and more specifically, how do we know each other?
Yeah. Oh, boy. That's a lot in there. Let me see if I can remember it all. Well, first of all, I'm Cameron from Columbia, South Carolina, born and raised. Of course, I'm a rising junior at Emory with these two knuckleheads, and I am a philosophy, politics, and law major with a minor in music research. And interestingly enough, we really didn't formally introduce each other, the three of us, until this past semester, even though it was sophomore year. But our circle of friends are so close together that it seems like we should have met sooner. But we met actually in an interesting class that we had this past semester, and I think we'll be able to get into that in a little bit.
Yeah, that's really crazy. Like, we were just discussing it before we started the podcast, how our friends are so close to each other, and even especially like our love for basketball hasn't actually led us to know each other until our class. How about how was your quarantine experience? I mean, this is a question that we ask all our our guests, but where are you situated right now?
Yeah, it's becoming the new norm nowadays. You know, quarantine rolled into summer, but my quarantine situation, you know, I'm back home with my parents and back here in South Carolina. And for me, I found this a little bit interesting. You know, the world has, you know, shifted on its axis in a way, and to be inside for most people is not normal at all. But for me, you know, I'm used to being inside, like on holidays and stuff. Like when I'm home, I appreciate the time that I have being home, because, you know, you spend 4 months, you know, in a college setting where you have to be active in all sense, you know, inside the classroom, you know, with friends, just keeping up just to keep up in a way. But when I'm home, you know, I don't visit anybody. I don't, you know, go out and try to make myself busy, because like when I'm home, I like to appreciate it. So like I kind of find like my space up here is like, you know, my time for me to relax and recharge in a way. So when people told me that, you know, you need to stay inside for quarantine to save lives, I was like, I'm all for it. That's what I usually do. So like, I, you know, doing this sort of stuff has been great. You know, being able to hunker down in my classes, it's been a different experience in a way, because I have noticed that instead of it being a one, you know, sometimes some classes can be like a one way, you know, transaction, but in this time, I think we can all agree that both the teachers and the students were learning at the same time, which doesn't typically happen.
Yeah, but definitely,
you know, outside of the classroom, you know, I've kind of had to adjust. Like my gym is like 2 minutes down the road, but I can't go. So I've had to lift in my front yard and in my attic and run around the neighborhood. So, you know, I have been doing that, you know, every morning, and, you know, finally catching up on a book that I, you know, bought a while back, but I haven't had time to read, of course. And everything hasn't been, I'll have to admit, everything hasn't been fully productive. You know, I found my old PlayStation 2 that I've had since like 05. And I've been just getting this wave of nostalgia, just playing all these games again. And of course, music has been in the mix of everything with new albums, old albums. I've been finding some cool stuff online. And I've just been kind of making the most of this thing. It's like you have this period in your life where, well, you can talk to people every now and again, and they'll say, you know, I wish I had a break, or I had some time to like slow things down. But in a weird way, even though it's under these horrible circumstances, this is kind of it. So, you know, you just gotta have to make the most of it and just kind of adapt to it in a way. So that's kind of how I've been seeing it. I've been staying positive with all of this, and, you know, of course, staying healthy, not taking any risks, because, you know, this thing is serious. So I wear my mask because I'm not a jabroni. So I'm still wearing my mask.
That's good. That's for deal. You. Good for Thank you. What's it like down there in Colombia? Is it reopening, or is it still pretty much locked down?
Well, you know, starting out, we had things kind of somewhat under wraps, because, you know, I felt like for the most part, once things were jumping off in Atlanta the way that they did, you know, I thought that since we were so close by, people would kind of get an eye about how serious this was, and, you know, how important it was for everybody to kind of stay indoors. But boy, was I wrong. There were, you know, a lot of moments where I just kind of scratch my head and just have to do the complete opposite of what was being told to me on the screen from our governor. And I think that it's one of those things where you can look at, it's crazy, because, like, you can look at South Carolina's daily coronavirus cases, and the graph for seeing how many cases are occurring each day, you know, county by county, is like inversely proportional to how our governor has reopened things. And I'm just looking at these numbers, I'm just like, does anybody else see this? But, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you know that people are going to try and do what they can to just, you know, kind of hold on to some sort of normalcy or sovereignty that they think that they have. But when things continue to worsen and people turn a blind eye, you know, it shows. And of course, you know, with our cases are spiking in South Carolina. Thankfully, no one in my family has been impacted by this. But at the same time, you know, we just got to do our part to figure out how we can move past this, because you don't want these past 3 months or near 4 months that we've been in quarantine not to be for anything. I'm hoping that we can. Yeah, so I don't want us to go back to phase one.
Exactly. No, because the thing is, me and Ben had this discussion earlier, I think in a couple of earlier podcasts, but I was listening to a different podcast, actually, and they were discussing about how it was pretty interesting. The mentality of people during a crisis, usually people want to go back to normalcy, because, like, people can't stay in a period of anxiety and distress for very long periods of time. And so they were talking about how, like, situations when Egypt was under, like they were under turmoil, and then, like, in Syria and stuff, but people, like, quickly ended up going back to their normal lives, like trying to pretend like things were back to normal. And I guess it depends on, like, each government style and how they enforce different different rules and obligations. Because here in Malaysia, people, like, I'm interning right now at a firm, and they are, like, even though the number of new cases is, like, very, very minimal, like 4, maybe 3 in the whole country per day, and we're still working remotely, and so, like, completely remotely. And so the thing is, like, even though the situation is better, it depends on which government style and how they want to enact on it. But there's still positives and negatives on different types of government styles. So
I think to take that a step further, you're talking about how people, like, by their nature, want to return to normalcy. I think you can take that a step further when you look at Americans specifically and sort of an American mentality. Whereas if you look at almost every other country, actually every other country is doing better than us right now. I think Americans have this innate, like, individualism where they're like, sort of like, it's my liberty and my freedom to do what I want, and I don't want to be told by the government what to do. And I think that's a huge reason why we're doing so terribly with this pandemic.
Yeah, and on that note, I completely agree with that. And, you know, when we look at the mentality again, which was mentioned about how we want to look at this and approach this, you know, from an outsider's perspective, you know, the approach has been, we need to have all hands on deck. I think what the medical, you know, realm of the U.S. has done. They've come together to some degree to try to make sure that everything's handled, but you know, they are taking the approach, you know, we need all hands on deck. We need to do anything that we can to mitigate this and figure out how we can, you know, capitalize on the resources we have, how many resources are left for that matter. I think of New Zealand, how they were able to have, you know, a rugby game on a weekend because they hadn't had a new case in 3 weeks, and to see the joy that people had because, you know, they took the time to work hard, pool their resources together, and figure out how to get out of this thing as one. But, you know, it's one of those things again where, you know, we have this sort of mentality that, you know, I've got to take care of mine. And if mine are good, then, you know, we can move forward. But in a sense, you know, that continues to divide. But, you know, hopefully we'll see what happens. But
that's a great example. It perfectly exemplifies the difference between America and so many other countries who think like it's for everyone. We want to do what's best for everyone instead of America. It's sort of like what's best for me and my family.
Of course.
Well said. Well said.
So maybe we should move on to something that you mentioned earlier. Something that connects the three of us was this very interesting class that we took this past semester. It was an African-American studies class called, I think it was Money, Power, and Respect, right?
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay. Oh, so I have, when I entered Emory, like African-American studies and that type of history and stuff wasn't really taught during my like time in an international school. And so I was pretty interested in learning that type of aspect because so much of American history is based on that. So I did take two English classes, actually one English class before we took that class, and I took another English class right beside it with a professor that's really good. Her name's Professor Tiara Jackson, and she, and we learned a lot about like the wake of the transatlantic slave trade, and it was really, really eye-opening for me. And so I was open to take another like African-American studies class and see how much more I could learn. And one of the things that like really, I don't know, Ben basically sold it saying that, you know, we're going to talk about Jay-Z, we're going to talk about LeBron, and if it's going to be those type of discussions, I was like, I'm down. You, like, these are things I'm interested in.
No, but
you were always about barely talked about LeBron. Like, at least even in the class we did, I wasn't there, funny. I don't think.
That was really funny that we only talked about LeBron for like 10 minutes in one of the classes.
And I wasn't there. I wasn't literally there. That was the one class I missed.
Wait, you weren't there for that class?
So the thing is, I legit went to every single class. I don't think I missed one class except that one. It was once we were in quarantine. It was 3 a.m. and I was super tired.
Yeah.
And even post-quarantine session, I went to every single class. It was at 3 a.m. for me.
Okay, I have to say this before we keep moving, talking about this class. So, again, because this class was so interesting for many reasons, once we got into quarantine, I had gotten emails from all my professors saying, hey, first of all, hope you're doing well. I think that this is going to be something that's going to be permanent. We're going to have to finish out the semester this way. This is how we're going to
do this.
Didn't get one from her. Nope, we sure didn't. So, I will admit, I don't mean to miss class. I don't ever want to miss class. I'm there for a reason. You know, I think it's important to learn all the good stuff, dippity-doo-dah, all that. But, you know, not getting an email for her and trying to figure out what this new normal was, I missed, like, the first 2 weeks of quarantine class. So, there was someone else in the class that I knew from, like, freshman year. She sent me a text and was just like, hey, are you good? I'm just like, yeah, I'm fine. How are you? Are you safe? Like, all, you know, asking the COVID question, you know, just trying to be formalities and such. And she's like, you know, we have class. Like, I'm like, do you have you been to class at all? I'm just like, what? Like, there's no, I had gotten no notice, anything. I didn't get a Zoom link. I didn't get any of that stuff. So, you know, I show up to class. Yeah, I showed up to class. And then, you know, she's just like, hey, you know, haven't heard from you in a while. And I'm just like, hello, professor. Great to see you again. Like, I got nothing. Absolutely nothing. But, you know, I think that class brought its own, you know, sort of bright spots in a way, but we'll keep mentioning
yes.
that.
Yes. I think maybe the wildest thing about this class was the fact that we got zero numerical grades the entire semester.
Oh my gosh, don't even like, get me started on that.
She didn't grade one thing that we did the whole semester, including the final. Like, no grades until the final grade came out. Nothing.
Not a thing. Yeah. Again, like, it was one of those things where I figured out what this was going to be because, again, like, she did not come on time to a single class. Like, the first time around, she's like, hey, I'm a new
teacher.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah, I'm finding my way around. And then, like, by class five, it was the same thing, either five.
I have a funny story about that.
Oh, yeah, please.
So,
go ahead.
So you were there, but the very first class, like when she comes in describing the syllabus and everything and how class is going to be, she was like, right. Oh, one of the most important things to me is that you're not late. And that if you're ever late, you better have sprinted here and you should be sweating.
She's like,
I want to see sweat.
I want to see panting. I want to see you pant.
And then she shows up at least 7 minutes late to every single class the whole semester.
That's for true. Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, that was so funny. I forgot she said that though. Like, oh my gosh. She really did say that, didn't she?
She really did.
Oh boy. Oh brother. All right.
But it was a really fun class. Like, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I have to say the bright spots, again, you know, it was enjoyable in the sense that once we were able to find our footing in the discussion, I think it was very fruitful. Like, being able to, again, some of the reasons why, like, we were able to get together the way we did and get to know each other so well was because, you know, when, you know, being in discussion and knowing that you guys, you know, were going to say not only your perspectives, but also be insightful with your questions and knowing that even though it's an African-American studies class, you still were able to bring your own side to things in a way that was very respectful. And, you know, knowing that that was part of the discussion, you know, nothing went off the rails in my eyes in that class when it came to how we spoke about things and different issues, which I appreciated because, of course, when I looked at, you know, this course, I knew that, you know, this was going to go in sort of the category of classes that you can only get this type of discussion at college, let alone at Emory University, where like Atlanta is a big, a big landmark in terms of African American history. So, you know, I didn't want to miss up that opportunity. I mean, I'm not like Adi where I'm clout chasing for Jay-Z and LeBron, but I knew that this is gonna be a class that, you know, I'll remember for one way or another. So, you know, it did have its bright spots. Yeah. So I think that once it's all said and done, I don't regret taking it. That's the best thing I can say.
Yeah. Yeah. And Addy, I think especially for you, like, you, like, before you took this class, like, you, like, didn't know that, like, as you said before, you really didn't know that much about, like, the history of African Americans in specifically in American history. And, like, after the class, like, you, like, talked to me about how you had learned so much about how, like, all the stuff that I had said to you, like, sparsely throughout our first, like, year and a half, you were like, oh, it all made sense. Yeah.
It's just, like, I don't know. It came to me, like, as a surprise at how, I don't know, maybe, like, because we're trying to be politically correct in this.
Go for it. That's the thing.
Like, I just didn't realize how significantly disadvantaged one specific race could be in a country where I thought there was equal opportunity for all, you know? And that's what I had assumed coming into this country, and I knew there was problems, but I just didn't think it was that bad. And like, I had thought that like the country had progressed so much, and especially, and we don't have to get into it, but like, Once you see about the protests and the Black Lives Matter movement that's happening right now, you understand so much more, you know? And I'm seeing this at a different lens, and I'm so glad that I took those classes when I did, because it makes me come into this, whatever I'm reading on Instagram or like the stories that I'm listening to, it makes me understand. I'm like, okay, I read it, and now this is actually happening. And now it puts me in a position where I'm more aware than I would have ever been, you know? Yeah. And so I'm thankful for taking that class for that sense.
Absolutely. And again, the class has bright spots again because it has impeccable timing in all of our lives, especially with us being at such a young age, but also seeing how it's playing out on a larger scale. And again, it puts everything in context, like for both you, Ben, and Adi, to see this the events play out the way they did, especially after taking that course, you put things into context. But also what I will say from my perspective is that, you know, the course is great, but at the same time, another thing to consider about this is that we only put this in the context of about a century of America's history. There's a lot of stuff that happened well before that, you know, provides itself as a common thread all throughout the years that we've been a nation, that will be able to put this into even more of a deeper context and have provide more depth for you guys. You know, me being from South Carolina, being raised in the South, you see things and you live things in a way that, you know, I haven't gotten the full brunt of it, and I'm so thankful. But again, you know, you can ride downtown in Columbia, South Carolina, and see street signs that are of names and of things that aren't in your favor. And if you don't know it, then you're just riding downtown in Columbia, South Carolina. But if you do, it sends a different message. And again, you know, we see these things playing out in our lifetime, but it's been happening for quite a while. And I think that social media has had a tremendous role in all of this, for people to see this instantly. Whereas in previous movements, you know, it's taken some time to grow. But for things to play out the way that they have, it's just a testament to show that, you know, we have one lifetime, and, you know, we've been able to live the lifetime that we have now. But, you know, humans are more similar than we are different. And when we look at how these events play out, we'll see on one side, you know, these things are still happening. They're very real. And we're not so different from, you know, our predecessors, but in a way, we have an opportunity to make a difference, be a change. But it doesn't come without learning about it. And I think that from you guys are taking the first step, and I appreciated it. And I could tell from the way that you guys spoke about these things in class, how we'll continue to talk about it once we get back to campus. But you know, we'll find something positive out of this, and we'll be able to bring good out of this. But it all comes with taking the first step to acknowledging and listening, but also just learning. And I think that we did that for the time we were in class, and we'll continue to do it. But we'll keep this rolling. But that's my piece.
Absolutely.
Completely agree. Yeah. So, I mean, like, we've already talked a lot about it, but, like, actually one of the conversations that I really liked during, and if we could get into it, that'll be okay. But if not, that's perfectly fine, because both of the time. But it's not specific to any of the events that are happening now. But one of the questions that I was really interested in, some things that I've actually asked Ben about, is specifically about celebrity activism. And that was one of the main topics of the course, right? And so I was just wondering, in terms of any event or any type of movement that is happening, it doesn't have to be in pertaining to the BLM, but what is your stance now that we've had the class and so many discussions on it? Where do you see, like, celebrity activism, just in general, play a role in society?
Yeah, of course. We saw it play out in many different forms from the course that we're in, you know, just in the weeks alone, in the months alone that we were in that class. We saw it in a variety of ways throughout the 20th century. But for me, I think that I see it two ways, and I think that's just how I'm wired. But on one, I think there's just a balance to everything. On one side, you can say that these celebrities, you know, they recognize their platform. They see that they've elevated themselves in the public eye, and they're at a position where they can figure out how they can use their voice to speak for others and make change for others, because they realize the influence that they have. I won't necessarily say power, because I think it's more of influence, and I think that, you know, being influential is a little bit more important to me than being powerful, in a sense. But I think that also on the other side of that, you can say that, you know, these celebrities have made themselves, you know, comfortable in a position that they are in, and they have their own agenda to push, and whether they use that platform or not, they have an agenda that they have to take care of to make sure that they stay relevant. But I think that for me, I always think, and this is not only for celebrities, but I think in all things, I think it's important to consider the source and know where it comes from, because, you know, one person can say one thing and try to make that their blanket statement. to take care of a real issue, but in actuality, they're kind of sitting pretty and doing fine. I think, obviously, within the past few days, and I think this is very relevant, we see Kanye running for president. So it's one of those things again. Wait, did you not know?
No, I don't know. I thought he said it like a while back.
So, no. A few days ago, I think on Twitter, Kanye posted again, his presidential candidacy or his statement on Twitter. I don't have Twitter, so my brother tossed me the phone across the room and said, hey, yo, read this. And I politely gave it back to him and just fell asleep because I was just like, not again. But anyway, I digress. So Kanye's back running. And again, it's one of those things where you have to consider the source.
Wait, sorry, for the 2020 presidential election?
Yes, 2020.
Whoa!
Good luck. Good luck to them.
We'll talk about that.
I don't even think we should go there.
So yeah, we won't go there. But again, it's one of those things where you can look, consider the source, and know that whatever he's done in his career, his accomplishments, whatever they may be, again, just looking at his platform, his record, it's unreliable. But at the same time, he's a celebrity trying to be an activist. So in all those things, you have to kind of make it important to analyze what's being done here. What's the agenda behind all of this, and make a sound decision after that. And we'll probably talk about Kanye after this podcast goes up. But yeah, so that's a thing, Ben, if you didn't know. Welcome to July 2020. We're still rolling every month.
About this issue, I'm still like really torn about celebrity activism, and specifically we're talking African-American celebrity activism, because obviously I think that if celebrities have a huge platform, and I think if they want to be active, I think it's amazing. Like, if you look at LeBron, what he's doing, what he's done with his I Promise School, what he's doing with speaking up about Black Lives Matter, he is the most consistent probably of anyone of being active as a celebrity. But on the other hand, I feel like it's almost an unfair burden to a lot of Black celebrities and Black people that have power. I think that on the other side, I think that it's not fair to say that Black celebrities have to do more than white celebrities, and I think it's an unfair burden on them if they don't want to be active. I think obviously if you want to, I think it's amazing, but on the other side, it's not fair to say, oh, if a Black celebrity is not being active, like, they're doing something wrong.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, I definitely hear that. You have a lot of celebrities that, know that they're building a platform that hopefully can get eyes on the issues that matter most to them, and LeBron's a perfect example. But there are also a lot of celebrities that, build such a large audience but don't realize the influence that they have, or that they do have that sort of influence but don't want to gear it towards something political, and whether it's fear of career, just for
that's a great point
or any of those things. So there are a lot of factors when it comes to that, and that's why making a movement that makes some considerable change so difficult, and that's why we see so many different groups vying for the same sort of thing. That's because people have different approaches when it comes to creating their stance and their movement on stuff, and that's why it's been difficult for people to make their way into this sort of stuff. But LeBron, again, like you mentioned, for the brief time that we talked about him in class, for the stuff that he's done, he's one of those people that, again, Ben, that you mentioned, has a level of consistency when it comes to this stuff, and that's why he's been able to be so successful in this aspect of his career. So that's a good point.
Yeah,
I mean, this is actually, to be honest, a perfect segue to get into sports, and like one of the main reasons why we wanted to have this conversation, to be honest. But before that, I think maybe after this podcast, we can talk a little bit more about like the repercussions of having this like name brand of saying that like even if you have like a person like LeBron who talks about so many different, he's I'd say woke about a lot of different topics, and he's really used his platform to discuss. But then when it comes to like topics like Daryl Morey and the tweet that he made with about Hong Kong and stuff, it's just like it's tough to, I don't know, maybe like we can have this discussion later, but
when money gets in the way.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, because the thing is, like, I don't know, like, at this point for LeBron, like, I don't really think he needed them. I don't know if he's doing this, like, if he's playing the game for the money. Like, I'm pretty sure he makes more money off endorsements, so it just depends, like, how we view celebrities, even if they are doing celebrity activism, but for, like, different causes and stuff. Like, I don't know, I'm not too sure.
Which is, I keep asking, keep going.
No, go ahead. No, I think you're going to finish off my sentence. Go ahead.
No, yeah, that's why I keep saying, like, my question always when I'm looking at things like whether it's Kanye or LeBron or anybody, you know, with, you know, kind of some sort of impartiality, I'm always asking, you know, what's their agenda here? What's the angle? Again, money complicates a lot of things. And that was another big point from our class that we talked about. Money complicates a lot of things, and it seems to wipe away all sorts of morality when it comes to, you know, issues that are so dire to a large group of people. Yeah. But when people see that there's money to be made, they can capitalize on it. And, you know, whether it's monetizing or finding a way to commodify real social issues so that way people can look at your product, or, you know, trying to ride on a wave of emotion and, you know, real passion for certain issues and putting your name in the hat. You never know what sort of angle people have in this sort of stuff. So that's why it's so hard to try to find who really wants to see change happen, or if they just want to make sure that they're on the right side of stuff just to say that, hey, I did this at the right time. It's, again, that's why it's so difficult. But then again, it's history. Yeah. So it all rolls together in my eyes.
Yeah, agreed. Completely agree.
Yep.
So now, transitioning to a little bit more about, since we talked a little bit about LeBron, back to about the NBA. And obviously, we discussed about it with Mike, and I'm pretty sure you've heard of the episode. So
I had to hear it. Shout out Mike also, and congrats on graduating. And we'll probably play a game or two down the line, but I'll see you soon, man.
Yeah, avenge me, please. But in terms of, like, the NBA, what are you thinking?
What are your thoughts on the return?
Exactly.
Oh, boy. I don't know if this is a hot take at all, but, you know, I'll definitely say my piece about it. Now, if you would have told me back in March that they were having a plan to start this thing over and try to get ourselves a real ending or a proper ending, I would have said, you know, let's do it. We got to figure a way to punch this thing out. But now that we're here, it just all feels so weird. And I think one thing that it feels weird, and I know what Adam Silver is trying to do, you know, knowing that there's no sort of 100% risk-free operation that they can undergo to make sure that no players test. But for the amount of players that have tested positive already without things starting, I wouldn't say it's alarming in a sense, but it's a little concerning. But also at the same time, I think that the argument was made before, and I might have been wrong here, but, you know, knowing that with all the things that are going on currently, seeing that a champion could be made out of this, they'll get the respect. But I see it the opposite way. I think that anybody knows that this is an unorthodox year, both in season, looking at sports, and outside in the real world. But, like, I think that anybody that gets to raise the Larry O'Brien this year is going to be dogged by analysts like Max Kellerman, Skip Bayless. They'll say, you know, under any sort of natural conditions or circumstances, they wouldn't be the champion right now. And I think that that's going to be
they're only going to say that if LeBron wins.
Dude, I don't know, man. I think they can say that if anybody wins. Like, that's the thread that people can pull out to unravel the whole thing. You know, under normal circumstances, if the finals were in June, you know, this wouldn't have happened. And I think that that's going to be the overarching argument that everybody's going to pull if, you know, things go in a different route. You know, I hope to see, you know, some good games. I will be watching, of course, but I just want everybody to be safe. And I know that it's going to be risky.
Yeah.
So if you're from, like, do you have a favorite team? I mean, like,
who's your team?
South Carolina doesn't have a team, right?
All right, yeah. So South Carolina doesn't have a team, professional team, I should say. I'll run down my favorite teams, because everybody that knows that South Carolina isn't like a pro state, they always ask like, well, who do you root for? So basketball, since we're on it, NBA, I'm a Miami Heat fan. I grew up watching Alonzo Mourning and like Jason Williams and GP and D-Wade and Shaq. Okay. That was my squad. That was my team. One of my first basketball memories of the NBA was watching D-Wade take care of Dallas in 2006. So that's my guy.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Excellent way to introduce me to basketball. Football wise, I'm a huge, huge, huge Baltimore Ravens fan. Everybody that knows me, I rock with the Ravens, and that's my squad. And you know, of course, it's a good year for us. But with all that's going on, I don't know how things are gonna play out.
Yeah,
but
definitely better than the Jets. Definitely better.
Wait, the Jets? Wait,
unfortunately, I'm a Jets fan.
Oh man, I'm so sorry, man. Hey, we'll talk about it. Let's see. Baseball wise, you know, just because of proximity, I'm a Atlanta Braves fan. And then
all your teams are just so good. It's crazy.
No, bro. Don't even start with that, man. Don't even start. I was watching Chipper Jones for as long as I can remember, dude. All right, but yeah, they got good, of course. And then for soccer, I actually watch MLS. Not MLS. Premier League, I should say. So I'm with Chelsea, the boys from West London. That's
okay.
My team.
Okay.
Yeah, those are my guys. Finally. Bro.
Yeah. Hi.
I was super Frank Lampard. That's my guy, dude. Frank Lampard is the man. And now that he's like a manager and doing his thing and like being an executive now, like I'm super, super proud, because like he's made like the full transition, and he was like one of those like super smart players, and like his hard work like paid off on the pitch. So I really liked it.
Yeah, I didn't know you watched the Premier League as well. Yeah,
dude.
Some teams have like more chances than they would have before quarantine?
Oh, no doubt about it. Again, I've glanced at the full scope of teams that are back. And just thinking off the top of my head, I think that any basketball team that knows that they have been given the invite to come into this Orlando bubble thing, and knowing that they basically get a hard restart on this in a sense, even though that the standings from the regular season are still sort of intact to some degree, I think that they know that this is basically a mulligan, and they have the opportunity to catch teams off guard if they aren't really focused in the way that they should be. So I think that the players that know that they have an opportunity to give this another shot, you know, some players went into the end of the season, you know, in a slump. Some players went in, you know, looking like they were supposed to, and I'll give LeBron his credit. He was looking like playoff LeBron towards the end. You know, it's one of those things where if I'm a basketball player, knowing that I'm in this situation, I'm going to make the most of it, but I want to turn some heads while I'm doing it, because, you know, if this is the shot that I'm given, and I know that, you know, less teams are in the equation for me to win a championship, then this is the time to pounce. So I think that there are some more teams that are going to be able to do stuff.
I'll tell you right now, Damian Lillard is going to go off in this restart.
Dude, I want Damian to snap. I want Damian to snap so badly.
The fact that Portland is not even in the playoff picture right now. Nurkic is coming back. Zach Collins is coming back. Portland is going to destroy.
Bro, if Portland goes and does their thing and run the table like they should have, you know, was it last year where they were close to the conference
finals? Western Conference Finals last year.
Bro, I was rooting for them so hard. Like, I thought I was a Portland fan. I'm a big fan of Damian Lillard.
Me too.
Again, it's
me
one
too.
Of those things where my type of
Addy's worst enemy.
Like players to watch.
Yeah, you know what?
Really?
I'll comment on that part, so it's okay. Keep going. All I want to say is that, like, I'm an OKC fan. I'm an OKC fan, and obviously. Hey, yo. Let me just say my piece. And then you guys can talk. So the thing is, like, okay, Dave played a really good, he played a really good series against us, and it's pained me to say that, obviously. It's not, what hurts me the most is that not only did he make that shot, which was crazy, because I didn't expect him to take that type of shot, He made it, said bye-bye, not only to OKC, but he said bye-bye to Paul George, to Westbrook, took down the entire dynasty.
Bro, he disassembled that whole team with a wave, bro.
He ended that team.
Crazy, bro. That's crazy.
Oh, gosh. No, like...
I still get nightmares about it.
Oh, I bet so. I mean, look, he made himself a meme, so you have to see it every time you scroll on Instagram. Like, he's everywhere.
Like,
but,
no. The issue is, like, people are saying, oh, poetry in motion, this is what NBA lives for. I'm like, okay, you know what? Relax.
It is. That is probably the single greatest shot I've ever seen in my entire life. The moment it came in, ending
Ben,
the series.
Ben, I'm down to end the call right now. It's all right. I'm good.
No. We can talk about this for a little bit.
I'm joking.
No, but Damian, he's a good dude, and I want him to get, you know, his time in the sun, and he definitely has with his, you know, his career thus far. But I want him to win a championship, and if he has to go through Miami 1 year, if down the line, if Miami and Portland have to meet in the finals, I wouldn't be mad seeing Damian with a championship, man.
Wow. Respect.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's respect right there, bro.
Yeah, so I guess just to wrap up a little bit just about this upcoming year, what do you think, Cameron, about what this next semester is going to be like? Because I guess none of us really know what the hell it's going to be like.
Yeah, dude. It's one of those things where you are, again, diving into the unknown. When all of this came out, I knew that Emory, and we all knew Emory was going to take their time with this sort of stuff, and having the CDC right next door, they were going to be able to have, you know, information that were going to allow them to make a solid decision with this. And I think that they did, in my opinion, for them to offer the option of both online and in person. You know, they're trying to make sure that they can make themselves accessible to everyone. Which I appreciate. I know that I'm going to go back. I know that I will be able to kind of get what I need by being close by, but also still staying safe, obviously, and I'm not taking any unnecessary risks. But I think that with the way that Emory's approached this, I think that they did a good job with it. Again, you know, we don't know what the semester holds, and we can only see once we experience it, but I think that we'll be just fine. They won't make sure that anything goes too crazy, especially with the CDC and Emory Healthcare and stuff. So that's where I see it.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I don't think Ben knows too much about this, but like, I guess this is his first time hearing about it. I've just made that decision of not going back this semester. Partly due to many reasons, but one, I know that like even if I do go back, life won't be the same. One of the biggest parts of university career like experience is basketball for me, and I don't think I would be able to play 5-on-5 or like maybe not even 2-on-2, like maybe me and Ben could play 1-on-1 or something, but apart from that there's probably nothing else. Classes are 50% online, 50% on campus, and I'm not too sure if I'm gonna get that like university experience. Most events are probably gonna be canceled, and so for me to fly all the way, like it's a 24-hour journey, one layover for me to go all the way, and then like if there was an outbreak on campus and I had to pack my bags within a month or something and then fly all the way back, that's a hassle. Or what happens if like Malaysia closes its borders again, because they did, then I won't be able to come back until summer, so I won't be able to come back home. And so like those factors just play into it, and so I just recently made that decision of not going back to campus. And unfortunately it's obviously like I'm gonna be one full semester I'm gonna be at home, and I'm not gonna have that university experience, but I guess that's the type of new life I'm gonna have to live.
Hey, yeah, no, for real. But it's definitely a real decision, and it's a smart decision on your end. You know, the difficult thing about this is trying to figure out how we can continue to stay safe but still get this sort of, you know, experience from Emory with all that's going on. So obviously,
no, completely agree.
You know, it's one of those difficult things where you have to make tough decisions like that, but at the end of the day you got to make sure that you can still be healthy, so that way you can still have a future to look forward to and have long-term plans. But it all starts with
completely
making some decisions now.
You know what's funny, like I have a lot of friends from, because I used to live in Hong Kong, right? So people who go to Hong Kong, they either go to university in the UK or the US, and a lot of my friends who are who go to university in the UK are considering not going at all because they think it's unsafe, and the amount of new cases per day is like 700 in the whole, in all of England. And and in the US it's like around 55,000. So I guess there's levels to this.
That is true, bro. Levels to this.
Yeah, levels, man.
All right, well, Cameron, thanks so much for coming on. This was a great conversation.
Yeah, hey, man, well, I appreciate you guys having me on. Whenever you guys want to talk sports, life, whether it's on or off air, just let me know and I'll be there, man. So thank you.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Peace.
Peace.